agreeable. And, you know, when I looked up this in commentaries, that's sort of generally what a lot of people think. I also looked up the Greek word, you know, one. I thought maybe I'll get some great insight into unity, and it just means one. I mean, it's very simple. There's nothing hidden, you know, exciting. It just means oneness. And, you know, I think in recent years I've thought more in terms of unity and in terms of friendship. You know, being really close. You know, you think about the one another scriptures in the Bible, you know, meeting together, encouraging one another, you know, worshiping together, confessing our sins to each other, you know, kind of ironing, sharpening our iron, you know, the real closeness friendship thing. And I think that's part of it. In a few minutes, we're going to go and talk about the cross, and I think when we go to the cross, Jesus really defines it. So we'll get there in a second. The second thing I'd like to talk about, turn to Matthew chapter 26. So we talked about the unity prayer, and then as we move towards the cross, we get to Matthew 26, which is really, betrayal and desertion. It's really unity broken is kind of what's going on here. So turn to Matthew chapter 26. Jesus is arrested in this chapter. This is also the chapter when Jesus is praying in the garden. But one of the big themes in this chapter is Jesus losing all of his friendships. All the people that were close to him leave him. And you see this throughout the chapter. It starts in verse 14. Judas betrays Jesus. I'll just pick up there. Then one of the 12, the one called Judas Iscariot, went to the chief priests and asked, "What are you willing to give me if I hand him over to you?" So they counted out for him 30 silver coins. From then on, Jesus watched for an opportunity to hand him over. Judas was one of Jesus' closest friends. Jesus chose 12 men to follow him during the 3 years of his life. Judas was one of them, and Judas betrayed him. So that you see here. And then Jesus is coming into the most difficult time of his life. You know, he's really, the whole idea of going to the cross, he was struggling with it. He starts praying. He goes to the garden and prays. And his prayer is so intense that sweat pours down his forehead mingled with blood. Okay, it was just such an intense prayer. He was struggling, pouring sweat, and where were Jesus' friends? Look at verses 45 and 46. Then he returned after praying to the disciples and said to them, "Are you still sleeping and resting? Look, the hour is near. The Son of Man is betrayed in the hands of sinners. Rise, let us go. Here comes my betrayer." His closest friends were completely clueless. Jesus was going through this amazing emotional struggle, and his friends were just absent. They weren't clued in. They weren't sensitive. I mean, it was obvious that Jesus was going through something here. And they were sleeping. I mean, they just weren't there. And then it gets worse. Look in verses 55 and 56. "At that time, Jesus said to the crowd, 'Am I leading a rebellion that you have come out with swords and clubs to capture me? Every day I sat in the temple courts teaching, and you did not arrest me. But this has all taken place that the writings of the prophets might be fulfilled.' Then all the disciples deserted him and fled." So not only were the disciples not there, they just left. They deserted him, which must have been incredibly hard. And then it gets worse. Look at Peter. Look in verses 74 and 75. Peter was probably Jesus' closest friend. Peter, just a few hours before, told Jesus, "I will never leave you. I will go to my death before I renounce you." And look what he says in verses 74. "Then he began to call down curses on himself and swore to them, 'I don't know the man.' Immediately a rooster crowed. Then Peter remembered the word Jesus had spoken, 'Before the rooster crows, you will disown me three times,' went outside and wept bitterly." So Jesus was completely alone. When he faced the cross, when he was nailed up on the cross, he was alone. There was all of his closest friends were gone. And then let's talk about the cross a little bit. So here you see the victory of unity. Turn to Luke chapter 23. Luke chapter 23, verses 39. One of the criminals who hung there hurled insults at him. "Aren't you the Christ, saving yourself and us?" But the other criminal rebuked him. "Don't you fear God," he said, "since you are under the same sentence? We are punished justly, for we are getting what our deeds deserve. But this man has done nothing wrong." Then he said, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom." Jesus answered him, "I tell you the truth. Today you will be with me in paradise." This is the most incredible verse. I mean, Jesus is dying on the cross, incredible pain. And he tells this man, "Today you will be with me in paradise." He didn't tell the man, "You're going to be in heaven with me." That's something different. He says, "I'm going to be with you in paradise. We're going to be together forever." And that's what unity is, right? When you really think about it, that's what unity is. When we tell each other, "Brother, we're going to be together in paradise." I mean, we're talking about a deep commitment. We're talking about forever. We're talking about, "I am not going anywhere. I am there for you no matter what." And brothers and sisters, that's the kind of sort of, that's what the church is all about. It's looking at each other and saying, "We're going to be together in paradise." That's what unity is. And it's bigger than getting along. It's bigger than, than friendship. You know, it's eternal. It's even, you know, you think about marriage. It's even bigger than marriage. You know, it's eternal. And that's what Jesus was praying for. And that's what unity is. So I wanted to share a little bit about, you know, my life, and sort of what this means to me right now. You know, trying to take something like this and break it down a little bit, you know, to put it into practice is a challenge. But first of all, just family life. Irene and I really try, and you know, we spend a lot of time with each other, and I do my best. I want my wife to know that she is the most important person in my life. She's more important than anyone in the church, more important than my kids. She is number one. And trying to spend time with her consistently, connecting, talking, and I go off. I fall off the wagon, and Irene talks to me, and I come back. But spending good time together. You know, we enjoy each other's company. So we spend time, we go away, we have date nights, we connect, we stay emotionally connected. So that's number one thing that I try and do. And then my children. A brother gave me some advice when my kids were small, and I've tried to keep it ever since, is spending consistent one-on-one time with my children. And I've done that ever since they were very small, 2 or 3. I did it all while they were growing up. And people talk to me, ask me about parenting. And the one thing, there's one thing that you do as a parent, and I'm talking especially to the fathers, is consistently, weekly, spend one-on-one, good quality time with your children. And connect, stay connected. When your kids feel close, when kids feel close to their dads, they are strong. They can put up with a lot of stuff, and they are going to put up with a lot of stuff in school. But when your kids feel strong, they feel close to their dad, emotionally connected. That is their most important relationship, and they're going to do pretty well. They're going to do pretty well, and so that's a huge thing. I wanted to talk about ministry. You know, ministry is just serving, right? And the way I look at ministry right now in my life is pray, plan, and serve. Pray, plan, and serve. And I kind of, in my life, I do kind of a weekly cycle. And there's a lot of different ways to do this. But sort of on a weekend, there's about, you know, anywhere from 25 to 35. I mean, there's a kind of a group of people that I really try and focus on. These are my close friends. And I think I pray about them. And I think about, I take time, I pray about them. And then I make plans. You know, I think about what can I do to help the people that I love the most in my life. And I plan, I think about it, and then I serve the following week. And then I pick up that cycle all over again the next week. And that's kind of how I break it down. There's a lot of different ways to do it, but that's what ministry is. And if it's pray, plan, and serve. If you take prayer out of ministry, I've done that, believe me. In fact, that's one of my biggest weaknesses. I take prayer out of ministry. What have you? Try and do it without God. That doesn't work, right? It does not work at all. You can take the planning out of it. You take the planning out of it, you don't accomplish anything. You're unfocused. You know, you don't know what you're going to say. You don't know the direction that you're trying to go. You don't love the people enough to plan, to think. You know, what can I say to the people? What can I do to encourage the people in my life? And then after that, it's service. You put it into practice. Get out there. It's that's where the rubber meets the road, is getting out there and just really serving people, doing what you can, using the time that God has given you to help other people and serve. So that's the second thing. Now, the last thing I wanted to share about is just, you know, as I've gotten older, I've realized how much I need close friendships. I'm one of the elders in the church in Hartford. And I feel the weight of the Hartford Church and everything that goes on there every day. I feel that weight. And things aren't all going well. All the problems come to me. Or Jim, who's the other elder. When people go through pain, it comes to me. I help people through death, family members through death. This is a part of my life. I have two older parents that live very, very close to me, and they're not doing well physically. In all the important ways, they're doing well. They're doing well spiritually, emotionally, but I watch them, you know, I'm watching them die. And it's not easy. I feel that. I feel that every day. I need my friends. I cannot do this without my friends. I got to have people that I talk to, that I connect with. And I think, you know, maybe younger in life, I felt like maybe I could do a lot of stuff without my friends, but those days are over. I wanted to share just Ecclesiastes chapter 4. I know all of you guys probably know this, but this passage has more meaning to me now than ever. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, starting verse 9. Two are better than one because they have a good return for their work. If one falls down, his friend can help him up. But pity the man who falls and has no one to help him up. Also, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? Though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. A cord of three strands is not quickly broken. It's an awesome passage. All right. I wanted to, you know, to sort of to finish this morning my sharing is to take it back to the cross. You think of Jesus dying on the cross, and he tells this man next to him, "Today you will be with me in paradise." Was there anything convenient about that? I mean, Jesus was preoccupied. He was busy. He had other things on his plate at that time. You know what I'm saying? I mean, he could have been so distracted. But Jesus was thinking about the man next to him on the cross and about befriending him and helping him. And I think about my own life. What is my excuse for not connecting and making friends and being unified with my brothers and sisters? What is my excuse? I mean, we have no excuse. When you look at that, there is, I mean, if Jesus could do it on the cross, certainly we can do it in the midst of our lives. So that's the thought I wanted to leave with you. I'm going to pray now for the communion. Thank you so much for sharing this with me.